Deceptively mild-mannered and innocuous-looking, William Egan Colby lived a controversial and at times dangerous life. The former CIA director who brought an array of internal reforms to the agency and famously made the decision to turn over its family jewels to Congress was also a champion of covert action and secret armies and counterterrorism. From the point of view of those who made their lives in the world of espionage and counter-espionage, Bill Colby was the ultimate subversive, notes historian Randall Woods in his new book, Shadow Warrior, William Egan Colby and the CIA. It is a great pleasure to welcome Randall Woods to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to William Egan Colby's life?
I did. I wrote a biography of Lyndon Johnson, and I've taught a course on U.S. Involvement in Vietnam for a number of years. And I became interested in the war in Vietnam after the Tet Offensive in 1968. I mean, after all, we were there still until 1972. And during that period, the so-called other war began. The U.S. began to tone down its conventional operations and emphasize counterinsurgency and pacification. Bill Colby, who had been with the CIA since 1950 and had served in Vietnam, was the principal advocate in Washington of this change and the emphasis on pacification and counterinsurgency. So I began to look at that, and actually Colby went to Vietnam in 1968, detailed from the CIA to head an operation called CORDS, which was a massive pacification and counterinsurgency program involving everything from building hospitals and schools to waging counterinsurgency warfare against the Viet Cong. The CORDS included the infamous Phoenix program, in which SEAL-trained South Vietnamese targeted and killed some 20,000 communist cadre. Actually, that's the forerunner of the current drone program. So, and Colby was an interesting man, a Catholic, a New Deal liberal, a Princeton graduate, and also a World War II hero, where he dropped behind enemy lines in both France and Norway.
Given that there is probably no such thing as a typical path to becoming a CIA director, give us an idea of his background and what ultimately brought him to that role.
Well, his father was a career Army officer and also had a PhD in English literature. And his father, who was a typical New Englander, was fascinated by guerrilla warfare and counterinsurgency during the French and Indian Wars and during the American Revolution. And I think his son, Bill, William, absorbed that from him, absorbed his interest. Young Colby went with his parents to Tientsin, China, where his father was stationed from 1929 to 1932. Very exotic and cosmopolitan place. I think that exposure instilled in Bill Colby a fascination with the greater world, with the larger world, with geopolitics, and particularly with Asia. But I think what really sealed it for him was his experience during World War II, when he enlisted, became an artillery officer, but then joined the OSS, the wartime intelligence counterinsurgency espionage organization founded by William Donovan. Colby's experience as an OSS commando in Europe during World War II left an indelible imprint. It was the most dangerous, exciting time of his life, and when he had an opportunity to join the CIA in 1950, and subsequently to really become one of the fathers of counterinsurgency and pacification in the CIA, secret warfare, he couldn't resist. It was in his blood.
Talk about it being in his blood, and I do want to move on, but talk a little bit more about his childhood, because you do talk in the book how even as at a young age he was drawn to these more shadowy aspects of American power and fascinated by irregular warfare.
I think he had a not a love-hate relationship with the regular military, but he valued the military, and his father was career military. But for him, it was too confining, too rigid. The irregular warfare, commando warfare, secret armies, was never fashionable in the regular army. It was always a stepchild. Colby found in the CIA a home for irregular warfare, and it was a kind of marriage, for better or worse.
What led him to being appointed head of the CIA in 1973? What led up to that?
He returned from Vietnam in 1972, despite the fact that pacification was going quite well, and Quartz was really succeeding in winning probably three-fourths of the countryside from the communists. The U.S. had turned against the war irrevocably. The government in Saigon, South Vietnamese government, was corrupt and ineffective. It was the beginning of the end. He returned to the U.S. His oldest daughter was ill, subsequently died in 73, and that was one of the things that drew him back. It certainly wasn't preordained that he would become director of Central Intelligence. Indeed, it was a matter of accident. Richard Nixon appointed him in 1973, I think because Nixon respected what he had done in Vietnam, but also Colby did not have any kind of political constituency. He was regular CIA, and Nixon and Henry Kissinger, his national security advisor, believed that a man like Colby could be easily controlled, easily dominated. And by that time, the so-called family jewels, the so-called CIA secrets involving assassination plots against foreign leaders and that sort of thing, was beginning to bubble to the surface. And Nixon and Kissinger wanted somebody that they could control and dominate, who would stonewall Congress and the press. And of course, they were to be sadly disappointed, because Colby proved to be quite forthcoming.
The family jewels reports that documented the CIA's many illegal and inappropriate activities, as you mentioned. And for him, this was really a torturous time, wasn't it?
It was excruciating, because he loved the CIA. He understood the necessity for secrecy, but he was also trained as a constitutional lawyer, and had great respect for the Constitution. And purely from a political point of view, the CIA had become the great evil empire as far as the anti-war movement was concerned, and even before the family jewels, and with the outing of these secrets, or the rumors involving these secrets, Colby feared that Congress might do away with the CIA, and so he believed that he had to be forthcoming with the Church Committee and the Pike Committee, who were investigating the family jewels, the stories of CIA wrongdoing.
When it comes to his death, to the end of his career, is really tragic, but also fascinating, because there are still many, many questions that remain.
He died under mysterious circumstances in 1996. He was 76, and at the time he was his second wife was visiting her mother. He was alone in their bungalow in Chesapeake Bay. He was an experienced sailor, and he'd spent the day working on his sailboat, and one evening he disappeared, and a week later his body washed up, washed ashore on one of the inlets in Chesapeake Bay. Now, after when CIA agents died under these circumstances, and there were similar circumstances, the CIA is always the first on the scene, and they don't allow local police officers or state authorities access to the crime scene until they're through. Now, the verdict initially was of accidental drowning. What caused him to drown is still, I think, debatable. There were some circumstances. For example, his body wasn't decomposed. If he'd been, the story was that he at 8 o'clock at night after dinner, he decided to take his canoe out for a paddle around, and fell out of the canoe and drowned. Well, but his body wasn't decomposed when they found it after a week. Also, when the authorities came and looked at his cabin, his keys were on the table. There was a half a glass of wine. His computer was on. So there's, at least in my mind and in the minds of others, some real doubt about whether he drowned accidentally or was killed.
So some 20 years had passed since his end of the CIA as head to his
right.
drowning.
That's right. But once you're CIA, you're always CIA, particularly if you're director. And he was involved in a number of activities that were connected with the CIA. He traveled widely. He advised other governments. He went to conferences. And he was involved with a banking operation in Australia called Nugan Hand, which had been instrumental in funding the secret war in Laos, and continued to serve as a conduit for funds to anti-communist guerrilla struggles in the Third World. Colby was an advisor and a director in that bank. So he officially wasn't associated with the CIA, but although these things are very difficult to discover, he still was involved in clandestine activities.
Randall Woods is John Cooper Distinguished Professor of History at the University of Arkansas. His new book is Shadow Warrior, William Egan Colby and the CIA. The book is published by Basic Books. Randall Woods, a great pleasure. I thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you, Joe, very much.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Shadow Warrior, published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.